is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, May 4th, 2004. Sadistic, blatant, and wanton criminal abuse. This was the conclusion following an investigation of the treatment of prisoners in Iraq. The conclusion of Major General Antonio M. Taguba in his 53-page classified report for the United States Army. It was completed in February, and by March, several U.S. soldiers were facing criminal prosecution, and officers were facing reprimands that would end their careers. Yet, General Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, who hadn't even read the report, suppressed it and tried to prevent the disclosure of the results of the shocking photographs and the shocking conclusions from reaching the United States citizens and people throughout the world. What he did was tell CBS that he would prefer if the report wasn't disclosed. Yet, on the internet, on May 1st, posted April 30th, Torture at Abu Ghraib by Seymour Hersh, the Pulitzer Prize winner for his reporting on the My Lai massacre, hit the international press. Torture at Abu Ghraib, Standard Operating Procedure, is our program on Taking Aim today. Last week, we had The Formula for Totalitarianism, Torture, Repression, and the Martial Law State, where we considered what was taking place at Guantanamo and what had gone on at Bagram Base in Afghanistan. It isn't new. It is standard operating procedure, despite the statements in the press and even the statements of Seymour Hersh, who is the one who brought this to the light. Ralph?
Well, actually, Maya, to put this in its proper context, the Dan Rather CBS report, and for that matter the report by Seymour Hersh himself, occurs after the government had succeeded in preventing the prior disclosure. This information and this documentation and this particular report has been around and available since December. That is now 4 months. This is material that was sat on. And when it became clear that it could no longer be contained because it was being picked up by the British press and being circulated elsewhere, it's only at that point that Dan Rather and CBS did what was in essence a damage control, because they offered to General Myers and to others the opportunity to say, well, this is low level, this is not systemic, this is not characteristic of the Army, and that's been the theme. Even Hearst, for all the report that occurs at Torture Abu Ghraib, attempts to ascribe it essentially to undisciplined rural local yokels who were not adequately commanded and not adequately constructed. It is the paradigm of the what could be called the second line of defense, a limited hangout, as the intelligence operatives designate. Torture at Khaib is not just standard operating procedure. It is systemic. It is systematic. It is the signature of the imperial state, and it has been characteristic of American imperialism at every conjuncture. We'll cite later the particulars of the precise paradigm of this sort of systematic torture and annihilation that occurred during the U.S. occupation of the Philippines at the turn of the last century.
Ralph, Abu Ghraib is 20 miles west of Baghdad. It was known as the torture chamber during the Saddam Hussein regime, and now it has become the U.S. torture chamber. There are 24 interrogation cell blocks at Abu Ghraib, and there are 18,000 prisoners now in Iraq in 16 prisons throughout the country controlled by the United States and the British. Four of these hold the supposed anti-occupation insurgents. The most of the torture, the systematic torture, is done in the 24 interrogation cell blocks at Abu Ghraib. The 320th Military Police Battalion is in charge of Abu Ghraib, and this is part of the 800th Military Police Brigade, which had been under the auspices of General Janis Karpinski, an Army Reserve Brigadier General. Now, in the press, they refer to General Karpinski as a consultant in civilian life, a business consultant. What they neglect to say is that she had been in the Army Special Forces for over 10 years, from 1977 through 1987, becoming a reservist in 1987 and maintaining herself in the active reserves since then. This is a woman who received all the training in the Army Special Forces, for which we have seen throughout the years the training in torture and interrogation, stress and duress, as they call it. But in fact, this is the highly sophisticated and highly developed form of breaking down a prisoner's will, and in fact is as lethal and devastating as the old forms of brutality.
Maya, actually, let's look at this clearly. To give illustration of what I meant a moment before about the limited hangout of such as Seymour Hersh, he talks about Karpinski as the only female commander in the war zone, and he does acknowledge that she was an experienced operations and intelligence officer who had served with special forces, as you say. But then he says, well, she had never run a prison system, and she was in charge of three large jails and eight battalions and 3,400 Army reservists who had no training in handling prisoners. So, in essence, he's saying, poor woman, she was out of her depth. Let's look at this a little closely. She had active duty military intelligence experience. Military intelligence personnel were asked to help torture prisoners. That's her own background. She is, quote, a special forces intelligence officer who speaks Arabic, and that was her function specific to the 10 years that she spent in the Army before she entered the reserves. So let's not have any ambiguity about this. Karpinski was in that job precisely because she was an intelligence operative of special forces, precisely the military intelligence which was running this operation and instructing the so-called military police in the uses of torture at Abu Ghraib and the necessity to break people down, to soften them up, to cause disorientation, to cause people to lose any sense of identity and self. The methods through which people are destroyed that we had documented systemically and systematically at Guantanamo and at the various holding centers concentration camps. These are concentration camps. The procedures are those of concentration camps. The methods and the means of containment are those of concentration camps. But for the niceties of the established and bourgeois press, we would be talking about the kinds of acts for which Nazis were hanged at Nuremberg. And they were hanged, let it be clear, at the highest levels. And this goes right up to Rumsfeld and Bush. They are, in every sense of the word, war criminals. They are, in every sense of the word, on the basis of this documentation, eligible for the treatment and the results that were obtained at Nuremberg. I have no hesitation in saying it.
The secret No Foreign Dissemination Report, Taguba's report, has now been given to Seymour Hersh of The New Yorker, to The Guardian in England, to CNN, to the Los Angeles Times. The New York Times has seen it too. So it has been distributed throughout the press. And yet, they still haven't put it up on the internet, but in dribs and drabs. A few of the photographs that came to light have been on the internet and were on CBS's 60 Minutes, too. The abuses became known because of one of the MPs, Specialist Joseph M. Darby. And he his role only emerged during the Article 32, the disciplinary hearing of Specialist Chip Frederick, who when he became a government witness. Now, Darby had been asked to process a CD-ROM that contained the photographs that were so shocking to him that he reported it to his superiors. But nothing was done about it. It's only later, when more military police also urged an investigation, that something was ever done. And as we mentioned before, this is a report. Even the investigations done by the highest levels of the Pentagon that have been suppressed up until now. One of the photographs shows a hooded and wired Iraqi prisoner at Abu Ghraib who was reportedly told that he would be electrocuted if he fell off a box. And even his private parts were wired. But most shocking to people in the United States, in the press, is the gloating look of the U.S. soldiers, women and men, as they stand over pyramids of naked bodies. And not just naked bodies stacked one on upon another, but in sexually suggestive positions. In fact, according to Taguba, there have been reports of raping of the prisoners. And on the Internet, although photographs not disclosed by CBS, too, are photographs of women being raped. There are the photographs. What is said by the press is that you have Iraqi prisoners made to simulate oral sex, yet you have evidence and testimony that this is not simulation, but forced upon the Iraqi prisoners. In the Taguba report, he does state, quote, breaking chemical lights and pouring the phosphoric liquid on detainees, pouring cold water on naked detainees, beating detainees with a broom handle and a chair, threatening male detainees with rape, allowing a military police guard to stitch the wound of a detainee who was injured after being slammed against the wall in his cell, sodomizing a detainee with a chemical light and perhaps a broomstick, and using military working dogs to frighten and intimidate detainees with threats of attack and in one instance actually biting a detainee. Ralph?
The report and the accounts don't actually correspond to the extent of this torture and abuse, particularly as it has been disclosed in the British press, to which we will come shortly. But to give a real understanding of what we're dealing with here, what Hirsch calls the stunning evidence to support allegations, we have an account of people who are not just being abused suggestively sexually, but it's rather detailed and particularized. Private England, Private Lindy England, the cigarette dangling from her mouth, giving the jaunty thumbs-up sign, pointing at the generals of a young Iraqi, and shouting out to her gleeful colleagues, he's getting hard, he's getting hard, and then obliging him to masturbate, and not just to masturbate per se, but to masturbate, here is the quote precise, I saw the naked detainees masturbating, kneeling before the other Iraqi with his mouth open. I didn't think it was right. This is the account of one of the soldiers. I saw SSG Frederick walking towards me, and he said, when he saw me, when the expression on my face, look what these animals do when you leave them alone. Then I heard PFC England shouting out, he's getting hard, he's getting hard. I said, I don't want to be part of this, and I walked off. This is the little beginning of the accounts of what is not a random event, but a continuous and systematic torment, torture, abuse, and humiliation, degradation, and depraved breakdown of the victims who are, let us be clear, 18,000 people in Iraq alone, 7,000 in Abu Ghraib, 18,000 Iraqis picked up at random, and as the report makes clear, those are the 18,000 who are actually detained. There are untold thousands who disappeared, who are in mass graves, who are all over Iraq in body parts as a consequence of this treatment.
Sadistic, blatant, and wanton criminal abuses. This is Taguba's conclusion. The 372nd Military Police Company is based in Crespetown near Cumberland, Maryland. Included in the 372nd, Staff Sergeant Ivan L. Frederick II, known as Chip. He was the senior enlisted man. Now, Frederick himself is a prison guard at the Buckingham Correctional Institute in Dillwyn, Virginia. He is a prison guard for the Virginia Department of Corrections. Another prison guard was included in among those who are charged. Specialist Charles A. Graner is a prison guard in his civilian life. Then there is Sergeant Javel Davis, Specialist Megan Ambule, Specialist Sabrina Harmon, and Private Jeremy Civitz. These are all facing prosecution on charges that include conspiracy, dereliction of duty, cruelty towards prisoners, maltreatment, assault, and indecent acts, meaning the sexual acts. Again, another enlisted person, Private Lindy England, was reassigned to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Now, among the according to the press, it is not the responsibility of these military police, to assist in interrogation, and that they are victims. In fact, as we know, with Frederick being a prison guard in Virginia, notorious for its own brutality in the prison system, which we documented in Buried Alive, Torture in America, we have here people who know the difference between right and wrong. And this is a sophisticated measure of their involvement, a known act. This is not fraternity hazing. This is brutality of person to person and to people who have no choice in what they do. They are the prisoners. Sadistic, blatant, and wanton criminal abuse. The photographs are so detailed and pornographic that Taguba himself did not include them all in the report. And it's not just photographs. There are videotapes. As Taguba said, he didn't include them, quote, because of their extremely sensitive nature.
Ralph? Well, it corresponds to the hundreds of photographs that British soldiers have been swapping around as trading cards throughout the area where the British Army is in occupation. Hundreds of photographs comparable to those that we are to what we are describing here. The report by Seymour Hersh, which, as I say, is a mutation or a muting of the actual enormity of what we has been disclosed, is nonetheless clear in what it indicates.
Ralph, it's incredible that it came to light, and we applaud whoever leaked it to Seymour Hersh, because more and more of these reports should be exposed. The torture in Afghanistan, the torture in Guantanamo, the torture in Iraq. This is common policy. As one of the soldiers who gave evidence, Specialist Matthew Wisdom, told a courtroom that Abu Ghraib is, quote, a hard sight, seven tiers of cells, and he said he saw Specialist First Class Snyder grab the prisoner and throw him into a pile, hitting the prisoner in his rib cage, and the prisoner was no danger. This is what Frederick did. So Frederick, the prison guard, who should know better, and as we know from the treatment in the United States, he does know better. He knows this is standard operating procedure. He was seen hitting prisoners in the rib cage and throwing them into a pile.
He's described here as a natural leader, having worked 6 years as a guard for the Virginia Department of Corrections. And he was selected precisely because this was a guard in Virginia not immune to and not alien to the very procedures that are being described here, the abuse and the torture of victim prisoners. And what is clear, too, from Frederick's account is the following. Military intelligence teams, and I'm quoting, which includes the Central Intelligence Agency, an interrogation specialist from private defense contractors with a dominant force inside Abu Ghraib. in a letter that he wrote at the beginning of last January. So we're seeing here then that this documentation is 5 months old. This material has been at the disposal of many for something like a half year.
Ralph, when the investigation started at the end of last year, Frederick realized that he was going to come under attack, and he started sending emails and letters to members of his family, including his uncle, who has now disclosed these letters. In other words, instead, he was trying to say, it's not me, I'm just following orders, it's the military intelligence, when in fact what we see through these letters is an entire structure and system of which he was a very willing participant.
Well, I was instructed to leave inmates in their cells with no clothes in freezing conditions or with female underpants. I was instructed by military intelligence to place prisoners in isolation cells with no toilets and no running water and no ventilation and no windows. Military intelligence officers told us, great job, you're getting the positive results and the information. When the military working dogs were used to intimidate the prisoner at military intelligence request, we were told in fact, I was pulled aside by Superior Officer Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Fillerbaum, commander of the 320th Military Police Battalion, and his reply about the treatment of the prisoners, don't worry about it. OGA, government agencies, and the Central Intelligence Agencies, and paramilitary employees stress that this is the way it has to be. They took one man, put his body in a body bag, packed him in ice for 24 hours. The next day, they put the body on a stretcher, placed a fake IV in his arms, and took him away. The dead prisoner was never entered into the prison's inmate control, and therefore never had a number, standard procedure.
Ralph, a December 18th email that Frederick sent to his uncle Bill Lawson, in it he stated, quote, we have had a very high rate with our style of getting them to break. They usually end up breaking within hours. And this was reported in the Washington Post on May 2nd. Breaking within hours, standard operating procedures. Now, the bags that they put over their heads are bags that contained sand, so they still have particles of sand in them. These are not clean bags, which would be suffocating enough to a person, but these are bags that had sand. Now, Specialist Sabrina Harmon, one of the accused, testified that it was her job to keep detainees awake, including one hooded prisoner who was placed on the box with the wires attached to his fingers, toes, and penis, such as seen in the photograph that's been distributed internationally. She stated, military intelligence wanted them to talk. It was Granier and Frederick's job to do things for military intelligence. Remember, Granier and Frederick are the ones who are prison guards in their private life, and OGA to get these people to talk. Now, Sergeant Javel Davis, who's also one of the accused, told the CID investigators, I witnessed prisoners in the MI hold section being made to do various things that I would question morally. And he was told, loosen this guy up for us. Make sure he has a bad night. Make sure he gets the treatment.
What is the treatment? The treatment is, as you described, the sand in the bag. Imagine yourself with a burlap sack over your head, tied tight at the neck. You can barely breathe, and now the sand gets into your lungs. The sand gets into your throat. The sand gets into your trachea. The sand gets into your windpipe. You're gagging. You're asphyxiating. You're continually suffering from the sand embedded in your lungs and bronchial tubes. These are torment, not for the moment, but for the entire time of the torture that these prisoners endure. And General Karpinski, the woman who is being described by her, she's but a business consultant in civilian life, so enthusiastic about her new job. Listen to her statement to the St. Petersburg Times at the end of last December. For many of the Iraqi inmates at Abu Ghraib, living conditions are far better than at home. We are concerned that they don't want to leave. Such are the conditions in prison in comparison with what they would have to endure outside. They want to stay.
Ralph, let's look at the standard operating procedure, because over and over what is being stated was that these six prison military guards are an aberration. They didn't have enough training. My goodness, these are prison guards in private life. And also these people, even if they had no training, they do know the difference between right and wrong and what is humiliating to people, and that when you punch somebody in the ribs, this is not standard operating procedure. But let's look, because this is standard operating procedure. And what has been stated in the press is that the military, they got rid of Karpinski, and in her place they have put General Jeffrey Miller. General Jeffrey Miller, of whom we spoke last week, he was the supervising general at Guantanamo. Now, they're bringing him in. Major General Jeffrey D. Miller, the commander at Guantanamo, not because of his experience in running a clean prison, in my opinion, and I think it's an opinion you will all share, but because General Miller knows how to make sure that no word gets out. And, in fact, General Miller will supervise the very interrogations, the very systematic brutality and torture that has been going on at Abu Ghraib, but will keep it hush-hush. If we look at some of the reports, we can see it has been disclosed that 2 months after Karpinski was assigned in 2003, in the months of August and in early September 2003, a team from the U.S. detention facility in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, visited Iraq. And this team was overseen by Major General Jeffrey D. Miller. Now, this is reported in the Los Angeles Times article of May 3, 2004, a report with the title, Prison Abuse Systemic. Now, what were the recommendations of this Guantanamo team? Foremost of its recommendations, quote, were that the military police guards act as an enabler for interrogation. In other words, despite what the Army is saying, and even despite what Taguba said in his report, that military guards should have no involvement with military intelligence, you have, coming from Guantanamo, the recommendation that military police guards act as an enabler for interrogation. And what is meant as an enabler? Soften them up, get them ready, and break down their will. Ralph?
Miller was brought not to take charge of an out-of-control situation. Miller was brought from Guantanamo Bay, and what was the characteristic of the treatment in Camp X-Ray and Camp Delta, in Camp Echo, as we described it in our program last week? Let me return to Andrew Chang's report on ABC on August 13th of 2003 with respect to Guantanamo and Mr. Miller. Beating, asphyxiation, electrocution, starvation, and sexual violation. That's the subheading, The Pain of One. The War on Terror and Torture. Beating, asphyxiation, electrocution, starvation, and sexual violation. Miller was not brought there to contain the situation. Miller was brought there to oversee the very procedures that are now being disclosed in their little example, their small example of what is a vast, overwhelming, continuous torture procedure in Abu Ghraib, in the detention centers throughout Iraq, and in Afghanistan, in Diego Garcia. The 18,000 detainees in Iraq are routinely subjected to this. It is not Abu Ghraib alone.
Ralph, on Saturday, May 1st, the Washington Post came out with what they considered their extensive investigatory report of Guantanamo, and I should note it came out after our radio show of last week. And yet, this is supposed to be a cover-up of what is taking place in Guantanamo. It's called A Holding Cell in the War on Terror. But in this article by Scott Higgum, Joe Stevens, and Margot Williams, Saturday, May 1st, in the Washington Post, there's a section on the Tiger teams, and this really reveals the extent of the brutality. The five-member Tiger teams, they're composed of interrogators, analysts, translators, and representatives from agencies such as the FBI and CIA. The teams can question captives at any time, escorting them into interrogation rooms and squat-like buildings near the cell blocks. The rooms have tables, a few chairs, and one-way mirrors. The captives can be shackled and chained to steel rings fastened to the floor. And this is the part to note. The sessions are not videotaped or tape recorded. Miller, referring to General Miller, said, he said, taping causes us legal problems. Quote, General Miller, taping causes us legal problems. Detainees might gain access to the tape through court proceedings. Then it becomes exculpatory, Miller said.
So what are we talking about here? War criminals, torturers, sadists. Maya, go ahead.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. Our program today, Torture at Abu Ghraib, Standard Operating Procedure. Ralph.
And in the Newsweek article of May 10th, the Newsweek issue of May 10th, Rod Norland and John Berry, in an article called Rough Justice in Iraq, Alarming Details Surface and Growing Prisoner Abuse Scandal, they attempt to examine the claim that these are an aberration. Quote, practically everyone involved in the Abu Ghraib investigation insists that what happened was an aberration. But others have told similar stories to Newsweek. And Amnesty International reported, as early as last July, that detainees in Iraq suffer beatings, prolonged sleep deprivation, and deafening noise, as well as sexual abuse and torture, extreme torture, no aberration, is the conclusion of Amnesty International. And as Newsweek recounts, others have told the same stories to Newsweek. Akil Hassan, detained last June and moved to Abu Ghraib, walked from cell to cell. And indeed, it describes how U.S. guards punished them all by making them sit naked and motionless for 6 hours. Racked with diarrhea, they were attempting to remove the sacks covering their heads. A female soldier grabbed the head of one, smashed it against the wall, and the account is particularized and endless. Moderate discomfort is how the U.S. officers describe this treatment. It's a gray area. The goal is to break a prisoner's will to resist by intense exposure to fear, shame, disorientation, exhaustion, and physical pressure. It's the technique devised by the United States and British interrogators and used in Vietnam and Northern Ireland. The report continues. This is systemic, all right. It's systemic not only in the sense of its use in prisons, but it's systemic to capitalism. It's systemic to imperialism. It is the touchstone of the torture state that requires the subjugation of vast masses of people who are targeted for occupation, their resources to be stolen, their sovereignty to be destroyed, their social order to be disrupted, the fabric of their daily life to be smashed.
Let's look at some other examples of the prisoners who have been released from Abu Ghraib and other Iraqi prisons. 60% of the people who have been held, according to the United States estimates, are there, and no information comes from them, and there is no reason. They've just been picked up for one reason or another. one unsubstantiated reason. In The Guardian from England on May 3rd, and also in The Washington Post on May 3rd, are articles which have the reports of former detainees. Angry ex-detainees tell of abuse is Scott Wilson's article in The Washington Post. Muwafaq Sami Abbas is a lawyer by training. And he said that the black sack the troops placed over his head was removed only briefly during 9 days of interrogation. He was forced to do knee bends until he collapsed, he recalled, and the black marks still ring his wrists from the pinch of the plastic handcuffs. Rest was made impossible by loudspeakers blaring over and over again the Beastie Boys rap anthem, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Now, his father, who's a former Army general, and even the U.S. occupation authorities had signed a voucher of his high level of cooperation and assistance in the days after the war. He was also arrested by the soldiers and forced to go through the same procedure of the knee bends and so forth until he collapsed. And this goes on. Abdullah Mohammed Abdulrazak is an unemployed 19-year-old. Now, he was held for 6 months in several prisons around Iraq, and he said the treatment he received was not human. The interrogators were included not just U.S. soldiers, but a man who was wearing the uniform of a Kuwaiti Army captain. And the U.S. soldiers came in and out of the room. Abdullah was tied naked to a chair. And even though he was blindfolded, he knew that they were Americans by their English and also their boots. Now, he collapsed to physical stress. There was no food or water, and eventually they had to take him to the Baghdad International Airport, to their prison hospital there, on a stretcher. There, he said, he was in a tent with 40 other prisoners. Showers were available only once a week, and a liter of water, that's a little more than 2 quarts, that's 2.2 quarts, was expected to last each prisoner for an entire week. And they had one meal a day with a simple Army MRE to augment it. He was interrogated every 2 weeks. His hands and feet were tied together. He was thrown on the floor, and in that position he would endure hours of questioning, much of it to elicit a confession that he was part of an insurgency or to inform on his neighbor, and none of that was at all true. Ralph?
New York Times, May 3rd. Command errors aided Iraq abuse, Army has found. But in the discussion that James Risen provides us in this article on the actual circumstances, it's disclosed that Gary Myers, a lawyer for Sergeant Staff Ivan L. Frederick II, one of the enlisted men charged in the case, disclosed that there was a broader command structure that had the torture modality as their primary task and their primary instruction. General Richard B. Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, gave conflicting answers when asked if the problems at Abu Ghraib were systemic and throughout the detention centers. At first, General Myers insisted that the treatments were not widespread and were the actions of just a handful. But then he later acknowledged that he had not yet read the 53-page Army report, and he left open the possibilities that the abuses could be broader. But indeed, the Dr. Guba report, as the Risen article makes clear, leaves us without any doubt as to what is called the far broader pattern of command responsibility than that acknowledged by Pentagon and the Bush administration. The Taguba report found that the people involved were military police under direction of intelligence and who were given specific instruction to soften people up, to subject them to torture, to provide the basis for breaking them down totally within a short space of time. This was the directive. Quote, a much broader pattern of command instruction is the subheading in the New York Times. The report identifies Colonel Thomas M. Pappas, commander of the 205th Military Intelligence Brigade, Lieutenant Colonel Stephen L. Jordan, director of the Joint Interrogation and Debriefing Center, and liaison officer of the 205th Military Intelligence Brigade, and Stefan Stevanovich an Army contract employee from Kachi, C-A-C-I, and John Israel, contractor for C-A-C-I, as being directly responsible for the abuses at Abu Ghraib. Well, these individuals are part of a... They're mercenaries, of course. C-A-C-I has 9,400 employees and something like $1 billion in proceeds from this torture operation that they provide for the United States government. And then there is Titan.
Ralph, not just the torture operation, CACI provides the email servicing for the U.S. State Department. In fact, 92% of its revenues of almost $1 billion derive from federal government information technology contracts and from the Pentagon. And Titan, which is a $2 billion industry, is also dependent on the military and the federal government. These are the, it's the corporate soup line that is goes hand in glove with the federal government.
And as you point out, Maya, Titan, by the way, has 12,000 employees. Titan is wired in to the command structure of the United States ruling class, not just the military, because Titan is a subset of Halliburton and of Kellogg Brown Root. When you're talking Halliburton and you're talking Kellogg Brown Root, you're talking Richard Cheney and George Bush. These are the corporate and banking instruments of the torture state. They wear several hats. They wear the hat of President and Vice President of the United States. They wear the hat of corporate conglomerates who build a military base and infrastructure and torture chambers across the world for the American military and its imperial tasks. And they actually are the implementers of the torture proceedings on spot. If ever there were a direct line to the war criminals that are those who hold power in the society, you have it right here. Abu Ghraib is but the particularized expression of systemic and systematic war crimes, torture, for which, once again, Nuremberg provided both the method, the model and the proper sentence.
What's different here, Ralph, as opposed to previously, is that the incorporation, as you mentioned, of Kachi and Titan, the incorporation of the private sector into the role of military interrogation. Now, we should make clear that the interrogators hired and sent and the translators and the other people who were involved in this military interrogation in Iraq, as in Guantanamo, as in other parts, as in Bosnia, as in Afghanistan, these are the former special forces. These are people who have been trained, who have taken into themselves, who know chapter and verse what they are supposed to be doing, because they were part of Delta Force, they were part of the Green Berets, they were part of the apparatus of the military, much in the way as some of the investigative groups that we have today were are ex-members of the CIA, ex-members of the Mossad. In Britain, soldiers say pictures are tip of the iceberg. Now, they're not referring to the pictures that were revealed by The New Yorker and CBS's 60 Minutes 2. They are referring to photographs that were presented in the Daily Mirror, and that were the allegations of two soldiers serving in the Queen's Lancashire Regiment that have created a scandal in Great Britain, much as is unfolding in the United States today. Tip of the iceberg. Now, what the British are trying to do, the British Army is trying to do, is to say that these are forged photos, you know, something of Photoshop or staged photos. In fact, the soldiers have come forward to say that these photos are a tip of the iceberg. In fact, hundreds of photographs of civilians being mistreated were circulated throughout Iraq by the British troops, and they gave chapter and verse of some of the torture. But the pictures were destroyed by the military when the soldiers' luggage was searched as they left Iraq. Ralph?
Torture mercenaries remain on the job. Today's New York Times. The contract workers implicated in the February Army report remain on the job. J.P. London, chief executive of Kasai, one of the companies involved, said, "We have received no direction from the client regarding our work, no charges, no communications, no citations, and no calls to appear at the Pentagon." And Ralph Williams, the vice president for communications at Titan, stated that we have heard nothing. None of us have been recalled. None of us have been reprimanded. We have had no information on any complaint. Kasai defended its employees, saying that we are well-trained former military personnel. The classified Army report asserted that Kasai is among those, quote, directly responsible for the abuses at Abu Ghraib, unquote, but no reprimand. Kasai International manages the State Department's email system, as you stated, Maya. It manages the intelligence operation. Steven Stevanovich is assigned to the 205th Military Intelligence unit. And that gives rise to the Guardian's report of yesterday in London. The abuse of Iraqi prisoners shows that outsourcing military jobs is the vehicle. Private contractors, 20,000 mercenaries, an array of traditional intelligence roles outsourced in Iraq, as The Guardian describes it in Peter Singer's important article, without public discussion or debate, 20,000 private contracting mercenaries operating in Iraq, carrying out military roles, logistics, interrogation, military intelligence instructions around installations and convoys, and supervising the detention of people and their disappearance. This, indeed, is the corporatization of every aspect of imperial rule, not just in terms of profiteering, but in terms of actual sadistic torture management for the imperial state.
Ralph, it should also be noted that one of the first acts of the Iraqi Governing Council, the pseudo authority in Iraq set up by the United States to give it a patina of legitimacy to the occupation, one of their first acts was to say that the United States would be exempt from any criminal prosecution for any of its acts in Iraq. So all the torture and all the harassment and all the maintaining people in isolation for months and what will be years on end is outside the law.
And that is why, Maya, the United States went before the United Nations in 2002 to oppose any interdiction of torture, to oppose any United Nations resolution holding states accountable for torture, to oppose any investigative procedure that could identify torture and hold those involved in it responsible. The United States government went before the United Nations to object, and they were joined in this by all of the various regimes that carry out torture, many and most of them under CIA direction itself. The torture state is endemic to imperialism. This is not aberrant. This is not isolated. This is not the scandal of the moment. This is not the revelation of the bourgeois medium that waits months before it is obliged to disseminate information that's already leaked out and been published elsewhere. This is the characteristic mode of operation of a system in terminal decay.
Ralph, just as the revelations about the lies about the reasons for going into Iraq, the meetings with George Bush and his intention of going into Iraq weren't revealed until the occupation has been proven to be a total failure. Torture and civilian deaths in three counterinsurgencies is an important short article published May 3, 2004 by William Marina. William Marina is a professor emeritus of history at Florida Atlantic University, and this is available at www.independent.org. And what Professor Marina points out is that the war in Iraq shares parallels with both the Vietnam War a generation ago and the Spanish-American War a century earlier. Massive civilian deaths and torture are characteristics of all three imperial interventions.
He says in 1902, the United States Senate, controlled by imperialists, these are his words, such as Henry Cabot Lodge, initiated another of its feckless investigations into the actual conduct of the war. And what they disclosed was systematic torture and mass killing. The estimates of civilians killed in the Philippines through these methods were over 600,000. The estimate of 600,000 is conservative. Historians have recorded as many as 2 million people.
Now,
the water cure, he continued, was the approved torture of the day. The mouth was held open by a knife. A water hose was thrust down the victim's throat. Whether he talked or not, most often death came later from the infection of stomach lesions caused by the water pressure. Civilize him with a crag. A rifle was the United States Army's great battle cry of the era, Marina recounts. And then, of course, the Tiger Brigades that the Toledo Blade disclosed in Vietnam. The International Tribunal on U.S. War Crimes in Indochina, of which I was Secretary General, documented overwhelmingly torture as the modality. The ears strung around the necks, the ringing them up of the Navy SEALs. Every unit had its counterintelligence officer alongside them to instruct on rounding up civilians and torturing them with electricity, throwing them out of helicopters, mutilating them and with their noses and ears strung around the necks of the special forces officers, not a random incident, but a systemic and systematic and characteristic mode of imperial war in the Philippines, in Vietnam, in Iraq today.
Enduring Freedom, Abuses by U.S. Forces in Afghanistan is a report of Human Rights Watch, March 2004, available on the Internet at the Human Rights Watch site. And in it, there is a section on mistreatment, a bland way of describing the torture, in detention at Bagram Air Base. The detainees said, quote, and these are from direct interviews with the detainees after they were released. And what Human Rights Watch is quick to state is that the only people they had access to are the ones who were released, and the stories will be even worse if they were ever had access to the people who are still being held. Quote, they were terrified and disoriented by sleep deprivation, which they said lasted for several weeks. During interrogations, they said they were made to stand upright for lengthy periods of time with a bright spotlight shining directly into their eyes. They were told that they would not be questioned until they remained motionless for 1 hour, and they were not entitled even to turn their heads. If they did move, the interrogator said, the clock was reset. In 2002, a New York Times reporter, in interviewing people, spoke of the detainees at Bagram being painfully shackled in standing positions naked for weeks at a time, forcibly deprived of sleep, and beaten regularly. Now, one of the interviewees, Rahman, said that on his first night of detention, he was kept in a freezing cell for part of his detention, stripped naked and doused with closed water. Then he said the troops made him lie on the ground at one point naked and pinned him down with a chair. He was shackled continuously, even when sleeping, and forbidden from talking to any other detainees. The detainees taken in shackles were made to hold their arms above their heads. Their shackles were then draped over the top of the door so that they could not lower their arms. They were ordered to stand with their hands up in this manner for 2 hour intervals. Now, this is not only systemic and systematic. The U.S. military endorses it and says it is the regular treatment, but they don't consider it maltreatment. As Roger King, the U.S. military spokesman at Bagram, Quote, we do force people to stand for an extended period of time. Disruption of sleep is an effective way of reducing people's inhibition about talking or the resistance to questioning, and they're not allowed to speak to each other. If they're caught speaking out of turn, they can be forced to do things, like stand as a payment for speaking out. End quote. Ralph?
Torture is commonplace, say inmates' families, reports The Guardian in London on May 3rd. Far less circumscribed and inhibited is the British press. All the time, continuous. We are not talking about one case, but of thousands. The Americans said they would bring us freedom. Is this what they mean, said Mrs. Hassan? This is a shame to us. My son told me they use electric shock against the prisoners. They remove their clothes. I can hardly talk about what the Americans are doing. They are raping the Iraqi men. And she states, we will not tolerate this. We have to resist. And the polls now show, the polls in Iraq, 81% of the Sunni and Shia population of Iraq are in favor of a resistance to American occupation. 81% of the population in a state of revolt. Torture commonplace, reports The Guardian. The Scotsman, abuses widespread. The evidence is demonstrative. The soldiers' evidence shows that widespread torture in Iraq is the mode of operation. Financial Times on March 3rd. Iraqi testimony demonstrates widespread torture throughout the prison systems of Iraq. The Sunday Herald, the pictures that lost the war, they are but the beginning. The widespread torture has been reported by every soldier that we have interviewed, states the Sunday Herald. And here we have, Maya, the Patriot Act reported in the Los Angeles Times. The Patriot Act, May 2nd, allows a surge of secret searches in the United States. The use of covert search powers enhanced under the Patriot Act has now reached proportions never imagined even by the American Civil Liberties Union. How safe are Americans? The question is asked by the Los Angeles Times, and it is answered in another article, Detention of U.S. Citizens. U.S. Justice questions denial for hearings for detainees. Civil libertarians describe as unprecedented the administration's claim that the president can order American citizens picked up on American soil to be locked away with no right to challenge their detention. It is described in the Los Angeles Times article as a ticking time bomb for the American people. And the Cleveland Plain Dealer, post-11 United States, post 9/11 United States, in the article on May 1st by Jim Nichols in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, post 9/11 the United States is like a police state. And the article, which we do not have time to describe in detail, lays out what we have been describing in Iraq, what we have documented in Afghanistan, what we have reported from Guantanamo, what we have established in Diego Garcia and across the planet. Over 30,000 detainees is but the little rehearsal for what is intended for our people in this country, brothers and sisters. There is no distinction between the torture state as it works outside our frontiers and what the ruling class has in store for working class Americans, for the mass of our population who are resisting in growing numbers the lies and the assault upon our gains and the injunction for permanent war. Once again, 1 million worker march for October 16th called for by the longshore workers. The fight back must begin because the torture state is not only systematic, but it is systemic. It is the signature of capitalist rule.
Torture at Abu Ghraib, standard operating procedure. You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Shunman
and Maya Schoen. Our program will be up on our internet site, www.takingaim.info. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net, that's PACBELL.net, or at takingaim@wbai.org. You can reach us at 707-552-9995 or write to us at P.O. Box 6345, Vallejo, California, 94591. cassettes and CDs of today's show are also available. We'd like to let you know that next week starts the WBAI Fun Drive, and we won't be on next week, but following on May 18th, we will be on for a special three-hour program, and also the week after we'll have a three-hour program, and we look forward to being with you then.